Our guest today is Dennis Balthasar, a famous UFO investigator and former board member of the International UFO Museum at Roswell, New Mexico. Mr. Balthasar, may I call you Dennis?
You bet.
Okay, you can call me Ken.
All right.
I understand that you are on the advisory board of the Great Pyramid of Giza Research Association. Is that correct?
That's right. I was asked a couple years ago to join that. It's a pretty elite group of about 30 or 31 members from really around the world, and they have done extensive research, particularly on primarily on the three pyramids in Giza, on the Giza Plateau, not necessarily the other pyramids in Egypt. Reason being that we believe that those three pyramids are much older than we've been told for all these years.
Do you believe that these three pyramids were not built by the ancient Egyptians and maybe some older race?
I'm pretty well convinced of that. Stephen Mueller, one of our board members, has done some research and has found a civilization known as Khemitians, K-H-E-M-I-T-I-A-N, who lived in North Africa prior to the Egyptian civilization 10,000-15,000 years ago and supposedly had contact with star people. The Sphinx, the face on the Sphinx, pretty much resembles a black woman, and the Khemitian civilization was a black civilization living in North Africa, predominantly controlled by the female gender. So there could be some connection there. Another researcher that I've found out about is a guy named Ken Klein. He has taken this back to biblical interpretation, believing, because he found salt water on the inside of the Great Pyramid, that the pyramid may have been under water at one time to a certain height, which could possibly go back to the Bible, to Noah's flood. He believes it was built in the time of Enoch. This is only seven or eight generations away from Adam.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that it's at least anywhere from 15 to 50,000 years old. It's always been, we've always been told by Egyptologists and different people who researched it, that it was a tomb for Khufu of the fourth dynasty, and there's never been anything found in the pyramid to indicate that anyone was ever buried in that pyramid. In fact, we know that Khufu wasn't. The only statue ever found of Khufu is about 3 inches tall, which is in the Cairo Museum. So there was nothing left for afterlife or any kind of acknowledgement of Khufu's reign, and definitely not inside the pyramid.
Well, there are so many reasons that have been given for the arrangement of the pyramids. The most popular one, I think, is that the three pyramids represent the Belt and Orion, and
right,
the Nile represents the Milky Way. Do you agree with that theory?
I definitely agree with the Orion Belt theory, because there's no doubt that the alignment is very similar, if not exact, to what the Orion Belt stars look like. As for the Nile River years ago was about 9 miles west of where it is today. It has changed course over time, like many rivers do. But that is also a theory I've heard, that the Nile represents the Milky Way.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that the construction of the pyramids in Egypt had any relation to aliens? Maybe they assisted in the construction?
That's where the Khemitian civilization comes in, I think, is because if they in fact had contact with star people, I'm not saying that the Khemitians built it or that ETs built it, but I am saying that the technology to build it could have come from there. My background is civil engineering, 33 years through the Texas Highway Department, building and inspecting materials used in the construction of roads and bridges, some pretty big structures. And today, with modern-day equipment, we cannot duplicate the building of the three pyramids.
Mm. Well, you know, I wasn't going to ask this question, but it comes to mind. One of the experts on the building of the pyramids claimed that the actual stones that were used may not have been quarried, that they may have been molded into place somehow. Have you ever heard that theory?
That they were what?
Actually molded into place, yeah.
No, the information we have is we know where the quarry is. In fact, there are still some stones in that quarry that were not used. What most people don't realize is that what you see today is not the original pyramids, because they were all covered with a polished limestone.
Mm-hmm.
And that has all been taken off by Arabs and different groups that have built mosques and different things. So There's only one pyramid left that has any of the cover stones on them, the facing stones. And it's believed that the pyramids could very possibly have been seen from outer space, perhaps from the moon, when the sun reflected off of those polished surfaces.
Mm.
If you do the math on building the pyramid, and you go with what the Egyptologists have told us, that it was 20, 30,000 people over a 20 or 30 year period, they would have had to quarry and transport up the Nile River 2.5 million stones and set one every 90 seconds, 24/7. And that wasn't possible either because the Nile River flooded during certain months of the year. So construction couldn't have even been done as far as getting the material from the quarries. And it just doesn't make any sense to go with that theory, because if you do the math on it, it's impossible.
Right.
We're talking 400 feet in the air with some of those stones that weigh anywhere from 2 to 7 tons. And in the king's chamber, the stones across the ceiling of that thing weighed something like 80,000 pounds. I don't even know that there were craft or barges that were able to handle anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Graham Hancock states that the Sphinx was originally painted red. Do you think that this is correct? And if so, that there was some relationship between the Sphinx and the red planet Mars?
Well, I think the Sphinx was painted at one time, or at least the face portion of it. The problem is that we didn't know the Sphinx even had a body until the mid-1800s, because it was covered in sand up to the neck, up until about the mid-1800s when it was uncovered and the body and the paws were found. So, you know, we really don't know the background on the Sphinx.
Right. Well, I see where you wrote an article, and you spoke about how Ken Klein believed that the three large pyramids were not built by the Egyptians. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering, how does he get around the fact that ancient Egyptian records have been found that state that Khufu's brother managed the construction, and the graffiti that's been found inside of the pyramids in some inaccessible places that seems to indicate that Egyptian gangs hold the stones, you know?
Well, the graffiti, we're pretty well convinced, was put on at a much later date.
Uh-huh.
That I think has been pretty well proven that was added. But again, I'll go back to the fact that when the Arabs were the first to go in the Great Pyramid about 850 A.D., and all they found inside there was an empty coffer, an empty box.
Mm-hmm.
And any pharaoh that was buried had all these possessions for the afterlife. There were hieroglyphics and paintings and different things to celebrate his life and prepare him for the afterlife. None of that has ever been found in the Great Pyramid.
Mm.
There's no record that Khufu was ever buried there. In fact, we're positive that he wasn't. And the fact that the only statue ever found of Khufu is that 3-inch-tall statue that's in the Cairo Museum.
All right. Some say that the shafts that lead up from the King's Chamber and the Great Pyramid point to holy locations in the heavens, and that ceremonies were conducted inside the pyramid that had something to do with the fertility rites. Now, do you think that that's true?
Well, the Great Pyramid is the only pyramid of all of them in Egypt that had both ascending and descending passages, air passages. The problem we have is, why would a dead pharaoh need air?
That's a good question.
maybe that was his access for the afterlife, I don't know. But there is just no proof that the pyramids were built for that. We think that they were probably built as machines of some kind, possibly energy machines. One of the researchers spent 2 nights on top of the Great Pyramid with some equipment. He was pretty well convinced that it's an energy machine that's connected to the 11-year sunspot cycle. And that's something that we're working on right now, too. And he said there's a bubble surrounding it, an energy field of some kind around the pyramid. So the actual requirements and why it was built are still unknown. There are really no records of anywhere in Egypt of how the pyramids were built. The only possibility we're looking at is in one of the paws of the Sphinx. There is a chamber inside there, but right now they will not let anybody go in.
That was my next question.
It's my belief that the tourism business in Egypt is big business, and it's going to be awful hard for any of us to convince the world that the pyramids of Giza were not built by the Egyptians. And I can understand that, but the proof just isn't there that, that they were built. I think all the other pyramids in Egypt, which would be 85 or 90 other pyramids, I do believe were built by the Egyptians. But if you look at those other 80 or 90 pyramids in Egypt, those that are down in Mexico, those that are in the Far East, they're all extremely poor replicas of the original three.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been duplicated.
Well, that's true. Do you think there's any relationship between the early builders in Egypt and some of the builders in South America that erected cities on top of mountains using huge stones?
Well, that's been a theory, Ken, and the Mayans supposedly go back to about 2500 B.C., and that's a good time period if you tie it in with the Egyptians, what the Egyptologists tell us. And that could be true as far as all the other pyramids in Egypt. But again, we'll go back to the three of Giza, and they don't match as far as the timeline.
Mm-hmm. There is a famous Egyptian wall painting of Egyptians worshiping a god that looks very much like what we consider today a gray.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Egyptians might have met extraterrestrials?
I don't think Egyptians did, but the Comedians supposedly did, the civilization prior to the Egyptians. I really don't think the Egyptians did. I think they profited from what was already there and then tried to duplicate it and did a poor job of duplicating it.
Zahawi Hawass, the Secretary General of the Egyptian Supreme Council of Antiquities, has become quite a TV celebrity. Some believe that he has been standing in the way of investigations by non-Egyptians into the Sphinx and underground areas of the pyramids. Do you feel that this is true, and if so, why?
That is exactly true, and it's our hope that the man will retire soon. We've heard rumors that he may be thinking about retiring. He's on the payroll for the tourist industry, and he's part of his antiquity group, head of the antiquity group. And some of the stuff that he says on television has absolutely been disproven. But he will not surrender that because of his own security and the security of Egypt as far as tourism goes and trying to convince the world that this stuff is Egyptian, when in fact we're pretty well sure it's not.
Well, you know, going back to what you said before about the pyramids maybe being giant machines,
mm-hmm.
That sort of indicates to me that there's more to them than we know.
Oh, without a doubt.
Like maybe something underground. Maybe even the present-day Egyptians have discovered this and are not telling them anybody.
Yeah,
what do you
think? That's a very good possibility, Ken. And the other thing is, I think as time goes on, we're going to find a lot more under the sand in the area of Egypt that no one knows anything about.
Mm.
It's my understanding that there are some places where it looks like the tops of other pyramids are sticking out from the sand. And until all that can be uncovered, we may never know the answer to this. And the thing is, they're the only thing of the original seven wonders of the world still standing. And the engineering involved in those things, the technology involved to build them, is just mind-boggling. Like I said, my background is civil engineering, and we cannot duplicate what's been done thousands of years ago.
Oh, I know that they're extremely accurate as far as orientation.
You're talking a quarter inch on each side.
Right.
A 50th of an inch between the stones. How would the stones even cut in the quarry? You know,
yeah, right.
That goes back to what you said about perhaps molded. But I don't believe molding is the answer. I think they were actually cut from a quarry. I don't know how. Possibility of water, vibration. Those are theories that have looked at also.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sort of hate to talk about Roswell since so much.
Oh, don't hate it.
So much is said about it.
It won't go away. You might as well.
But I'd be remiss, you know, to let this opportunity slip by since you've studied the subject for so long. So let me ask you, first of all, how many crash sites are there?
I don't know if I have enough fingers for that. You have what I consider the main site, which is the Foster Ranch, where Mac Brazel, the rancher, found the material 60-some miles northwest of town. You have the site in the Capitan Mountain, which is west of town, which was made popular by Jim Ragsdale in the early to mid-90s. You have the Corn Ranch site, 22 miles north of town, made famous by Schmidt and Randall in their book, two books about Roswell. Stanton Friedman talks about the plains of St. Augustine west of Roswell, possibly involving two craft, one coming down there, the other at the Foster Ranch. And then there's been rumors of one or two other sites. But looking at this like I have for the last 12 years full-time and talking with, working with Stanton Friedman and other researchers, I'm convinced that the Foster Ranch, where Matt Brazel, the rancher, found the material, is the main site. That was the debris field. Now, whether it went back airborne and came down somewhere else, there's been a report that the bodies were found a mile and a half from that site, perhaps having been in a capsule of some kind and then ejected or thrown out. The crash sites are difficult because, you know, we've had these different stories. I don't put any confidence in the Jim Ragsdale site in the Capitan Mountain, primarily because he came out with two affidavits about two different locations, two different stories. And the UFO Museum was profiting from that by selling a video and book, and I don't put a whole lot of confidence in that one.
Right. Okay. Well, the story goes that Major Marcel brought home some sort of material from a crashed UFO, and one of the things was a piece of memory metal that would spring back into shape. I've seen his son talk about it many times, but all of a sudden now he seems to be denying everything. Have you noticed that?
No. He just came out with a new book last summer, Jesse Marcel Jr. did, called The Roswell Legacy, where he probably, how to describe it, he probably relives the last 60 years and what his family, his own family, and his dad's family went through. Jesse Marcel, Major Marcel, was the top intelligence officer in the military in 1947 and had no reason to make up a story and definitely knew the difference between a weather balloon and anything else, having had been to different military schools within two or three years of the event. Top man in the military as far as intelligence. However, he also was the scapegoat for the Roswell incident, because when he took the material to General Ramey's office and was posed with pictures that were taken in the general's office, he said until the day he died that the material he posed with was not what he had brought to
him. Well, yeah, I'm aware of that.
Worth. And he took the heat for it, really. Jesse Marcel Jr. had the utmost admiration for. He has retired from the military three times. At the age of 68, he was called up to active duty and went to the Mideast, flew 235 missions as a helicopter pilot and a doctor at 68 years of age. This is not a fly-by-night guy.
Mm.
He was a medical doctor in Helena, Montana. Still is employed with the Veterans Administration Hospital up there. I know Jesse fairly well. In fact, I'm going to be Master of Ceremonies at the Aztec Symposium in Aztec, New Mexico in March, and Jesse is one of our speakers that I get to introduce.
Oh, right.
I know Jesse well. I respect him. I respect, I would highly recommend his book, The Roswell Legacy, because in there he reveals some things about his dad that we didn't know before. Some of the meetings he had and what they went through.
Yeah.
And he was quiet about this pretty much all these years, and 60 years later now he finally has come out with the book.
Is there any part of the Roswell story that most people are unaware of? I mean, the story's been told a million times, you know, but is there anything that maybe has never come out that, well, I shouldn't say never come out, that's come out but been squelched so that the general public doesn't know about it?
Well, I think we have a good example of that with the Stephenville, Texas sighting last week. You know, the military and the government are extremely good at cover-up, have been for many years. And young people in this country are accepting that, and that's unfortunate. They need to start asking questions of the government and military and demand answers, because we're being lied to. Witnesses for the Roswell incident are probably the key thing. I do not have any physical evidence or a piece of metal or a piece of an alien or anything like that. But the witnesses over the years, and I personally have interviewed probably 100 and 150 first and second-hand witnesses. Been hundreds of witnesses have been interviewed about this, and it's not a story that they make up. the people that were involved, the story died for 30 years.
Right.
3 days after it happened, it was covered up, and then nothing happened again until 1978 when Stanton Friedman found Major Marcel in Louisiana and interviewed him, and the research began again. So we've been lied to 4 times over 60 years by the Air Force. First time was the press release that Walter Hall put out July 8, 1947, saying we have a flying saucer in our possession. The only time in the history of the United States that the media has said we have one. And then the next day, General Ramey came out, said, no, it was a weather balloon. They didn't know what they were talking about.
Right.
The people he's saying didn't know what they were talking about were the 509th Bomb Wing. They dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the Second World War, and then were stationed here in Roswell. These were the best pilots, navigators, the best everything, trained to handle and deliver the atomic bombs, but too dumb to know the difference between a weather balloon and a flying saucer.
Right.
So, you know, that's been a problem for me during this research, is that the military people have lied to us. In 1994, they came out with the Mogul balloon story, saying that it was a Mogul balloon, a high secretive balloon project that was to keep track of the Russians doing nuclear testing. Russians didn't do any nuclear testing until 1949, 2 years after the incident. And then the final excuse was in 1997, the 50th anniversary. They came out and said that they had never mentioned the bodies, and actually what the bodies were, anthropomorphic crash test dummies. Those weren't used till 1953.
Plus, they had a hook in their head.
Yeah. So the Air Force shot themselves in the foot with that one. And then, you know, since then, more recently, you have the Phoenix lights, you have the O'Hare Airport sighting November a year ago, and just last week, the Stephenville.
Right.
So it's a continuing process by the government to lie.
Well, what do you think about the people that have been trying to analyze the note that was in General Ramey's hand?
I've been part of that. David Rudiak has done a lot of good work on that, and there is no question among the UFO community that the words victims of the wreck, or some of the words that are on that 7 or 8, 9 line teletype that Ramey's holding. Ramey had no idea that the text, the type print on that teletype was facing the camera when the picture was taken. Nor did he realize that years later there would be technology and equipment available to interpret that. And there's no question that victims of the wreck is part of the wording, as well as some talk about a second sight and also a balloon cover-up. So that is still being done and will continue to be done as better equipment becomes available. But I think that could be one of the smoking guns of resolving Roswell, because the same guy that covered it up, General Ramey, may have been holding the answer to it.
Mm. Do you think that there was at least one alien that was alive that was recovered?
That's been reported, Ken. I have no validation on that. Several witnesses have said that it was alive for a period of time, and the number of aliens has varied depending who you talk to, anywhere from 3 to 5. The description of them has varied a little bit. Most are of the consensus that they were pretty much humanoid looking, in that they resembled a human being upright, very small body, large head, elongated eyes. The differences would be the length of their arms, the number of fingers, no ears and no nose, just orifices or slots. There's been a lot of discussion about the aliens themselves, but yeah, I heard that same thing.
Many of the witnesses that were involved with Roswell claim that they were threatened by people unknown, I guess I'd have to say. Do you think that this was true?
I know this is true. I personally experienced it.
You did, huh?
I know Glenn Dennis, the mortician, was told that if he talked about it, went to town and talked about it, they'd find his bones in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
There were others. And then in 1997, I went to Oklahoma to get a piece of the medal. I got a call from a guy who said his dad was here as a military policeman. He had a piece of the medal about the size of a silver dollar, crumbled it up, it went back to its original shape in a few seconds. So I made arrangements to go over and meet the guy. He had terminal cancer. I talked to him on the telephone one time. I talked to his son several times. confidentiality, the whole thing. And I went over to Oklahoma, had a phone number, and called and was told he was out of town on an emergency. And I told him I was expecting to meet with him the next day, the son. And I laid around the hotel all day, called three times, kept getting a recording. And finally, about 3 o'clock, the phone rang, and a woman said, meet him at Denny's restaurant at 7 o'clock. So I went to Denny's restaurant, a man and woman walked in. Fitting the clothing description they had given me on the phone, and he said, are you Dennis? I said, yeah. He said, the gentleman you plan on meeting will not be here. I said, who are you? He said, we're special agents of the United States Air Force Office of Special Investigation. I said, how did you know I was coming over here? He said, we knew Friday you'd be here Monday. I said, my phone tapped. He smiled and said, you know how we do business. I sat down with these two people for about a 3.5-hour meeting. Didn't take any notes. I was scared to death. And we talked about Area 51. We talked about Roswell. He had a map of New Mexico. We talked about the crash sites. He had some drawings of UFOs. We talked about the Bible connection. We talked about the government cover-up. And basically, he said that the family had decided the government should have it, not me. So I left and came back and never got to meet the son or the father. And I got back on a Sunday, called over there Monday and talked to the son and told him how upset I was that I was set up like that. And he said, I can't talk or someone's still here.
Mm-hmm.
By that time, another voice came on the phone. He said he was in charge of the two agents I had met. We were on the phone about 20 minutes. I think three times he told me his office didn't do any strong-arm tactics, and I don't know why I needed to know that. And then it pretty much died. I couldn't go any further with it. And then in December of 1997, I realized that I had never checked to see who owned that telephone for that number I had in Oklahoma. So I called my long distance carrier and I lied to him. I said I was doing taxes and I needed a name of some phone calls I had made. And it turns out it was the first name of the female agent. So I called over there again, told her who I was and that I was upset. And I said, I'm going to give you the opportunity to explain what happened. And a male voice came on the phone and said, if you keep messing with the Air Force OSI office, you're barking up the wrong alley. Click. That I considered a threat.
Yeah, right.
I have not been able to follow up since. I don't know if the people were real agents or not. I have no reason to believe they were not. If they were real agents, then 50 years later, we still had a cover. Mm-hmm. If it was a hoax and I was set up and scammed, and that's a possibility. That I was set up, and I'd like to know who they were because they're impersonating federal agents, which is a pretty serious offense. But I still work this. It's still active, but I'm not getting anywhere with it. We're trying to get anything because a lot of the names I was given were not real names.
Mm.
But I guess, to answer your question, threats are real.
Were you ever able to determine the exact shape of what crashed in Roswell, or was there more than one type of craft?
Well, they talk about discs, but we're pretty much of the opinion that it was kind of not necessarily triangular, but more like the heel of a shoe, with a rounded front and kind of a squared off back. And that's pretty much, I think, the accepted configuration or shape of it. Size-wise, probably 25, 30 feet in diameter.
Right. It's been said that some of the high-power radar units can knock down UFOs because they affect the engines in some way. Years later, it was even said that a UFO attacked and destroyed a Russian high-powered radar station. Do you believe that this is true?
Yeah, good point, Ken. Microwave was in use back then, and on the Aztec crash, which happened in March 48, 10 months after, or supposedly happened 10 months after Roswell, we've located three radar stations in northern New Mexico that we didn't even know existed, microwave radars. The microwave radar could have an effect on both propulsion and guidance. Now, the story that we've had for years about Roswell was that it was involved in a thunderstorm, and that could have possibly got hit by lightning, which also could have an effect on the guidance or the propulsion, depending whether they were used to those kind of things or not, and whether it was a problem or not. But microwave is a definite possibility because microwave was in use in the area and could have had some effect on it coming down.
Yeah, I had heard that the Russians had actually built a weapon out of a high-powered radar to knock these things down.
It's a possibility. I'm not familiar with it, but it is a possibility.
Yeah. Why do you think the U.S. Army originally put out the story that a flying disc had crashed if they didn't believe it was true?
Well, one of the things we're looking at now, and this has come about through Walter Holt's affidavit, the public relations officer, who came out with an affidavit that he signed in 2002 saying that General Ramey and Colonel DeBose were here in Roswell for a meeting on the morning of July 8th prior to the news release going out. We're trying to find some flight records and diaries and see if we can verify that, and if we can, that's going to be important, because that means that they sat around a table, handled the debris, and made the decision to have a cover story. And it's my understanding, having talked to witnesses that were supposedly at that meeting, that the consensus was that, well, let's just tell them what it was. Nobody's going to believe it.
Uh-huh.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, I guess.
The other thing is, it could have been brought down Main Street in Roswell, and no one would have ever paid any attention to it, because there were a tremendous amount of aircraft crashes in the vicinity of Roswell during those years, with the 509th being located here and other squadrons being located. This was a big base back in 1947, and constantly there were craft being brought through town on flatbed trailers covered with a tarp, and nobody paid any attention to it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I think it could have been brought through town to the base, and no one would have ever given it a second thought.
Well, that's a good fact. I haven't heard that one before. You've dedicated a good part of your life to the Roswell investigation. Was it worth it?
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe not. Good question, though. Frustration sets in every so often. You know, you're fighting a battle with the military and the government trying to get information, and constantly are being lied to or perverted off somewhere, other direction. Freedom of Information Act requests sometimes are very discouraging, because we have this law that says they're supposed to be truthful with us, and if you mention Roswell, you can expect you're going to get a stamp reply back with a rubber stamp saying that those records were probably destroyed in the fire at the National Personnel Records Center in St. Louis. So it's a constant battle. But I think I'm 66 years old.
So am I.
And, you know, I used to think, well, I'm going to have an answer here before I die. But I'm beginning to think I won't.
No, I don't think any of us know the answer to this.
But if what I do or what other researchers do is profitable and shows the truth, then it was all worth it, because if our kids and our grandkids can ever find the truth, I think that's going to be a benefit.
Right.
And I guess that's why I keep doing it. Every so often I get a email from a kid in junior high school or community college that's doing a report on UFOs, and they'll write and ask me if I'll answer questions. And I make a deal with them that I will, providing they give me a copy of the report. And then I post them on my website.
Oh, yeah, I get that once in a while, too.
I have a section there for kids' views on UFOs, which I'm really proud of, because some of these kids haven't been corrupted yet, and they have some pretty good theories and good ideas, and it's really, that's the hope for the UFO community, is that we get young people involved.
That's right. Does the Roswell Museum contain any pieces of material that are actually from crash sites, maybe?
No. They had a piece back in the mid-90s that was given to them, and I was involved with having that checked, and it turned out to be Japanese jewelry. Mm. It was layered copper, brass, and silver, and extremely interesting, but we sent it out to New Mexico Tech at Socorro, and they did testing on it, and it was all earthly products, and we finally located the company that makes the stuff, and but no, as far as having any actual proof, no.
Do you know Dr. Roger Lear?
Yeah.
Well, then you must know that he stated that he has an object that is said to have been recovered from the Roswell crash. Did you know that?
He has done, he's the one that does the...
He removes implants. Yes, he removes implants. Yes.
Yeah, I knew he had some material. I didn't know that it was specifically from the Roswell crash, but yeah, I'm familiar with his work and what he does.
Yeah, he said, he told me that he doesn't actually know where it is, but he can get his hands on it if he has to. And the reason he keeps it that way is because everybody that has come into contact with this thing has died.
The thing is, anybody that goes public with this is not going to have it very long. Mac Brazel's son himself had gone to a bar in Corona, and he had gone out to the crash site sometime after the crash on horseback, and I think after a rain, he found some metal, went into Corona, talked about it at the bar. The next day, he was visited and told, I want it.
Yeah, right.
The museum had offered $1 million for... a verifiable piece, which was a kind of a dumb thing to do, because anybody that would contact the museum and have a piece would be followed and taken care of.
Yep. If I was to go to any of the crash sites today and I brought with me a metal detector or a Geiger counter or any other instrument, would I be able to detect anything unusual at all?
I don't think so, Ken. A few years ago, the Sci-Fi Channel and the University of New Mexico archaeological team did a dig, and they recovered 60-some samples, of which nothing proved of value. What they did discover, though, was there was supposedly a trench where this thing hit the ground and slid for some period of time, and they took a backhoe and dug across that trench. And about 2 feet down, there's a difference in the strata of the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be looked at again, because that could have filled in over 50 years with dust storms and stuff. And I think that would be worth looking at. But as far as any material, it was our impression that perhaps varmints could have taken some of the material and taken it down in their holes in the dirt. But nothing of any value has ever been discovered.
Well, it could have been.
There was a cleanup done by the military on more than one occasion where mm-hmm. the guys were shoulder to shoulder walking across the field, basically like a vacuum cleaner, picking right. up everything that was there.
I've heard that many UFOs are still being sighted in the area. Do you believe that they are actual UFOs, or that people coming to the town are so hyped up that they're in Roswell that they think they're seeing UFOs?
Well, first of all, about 90 to 95% of what people see and believe are UFOs are explainable objects, whether they're planets, stars, meteors, weather balloons, airplanes, whatever, man-made objects or natural phenomena. Those we don't worry about. What we do worry about is the 5 or 10% that can't be explained, just like in Blue Book, the government report on flying saucers. 1,300 cases, of which several hundred are still unexplained. And what's interesting is Roswell is not even in the Blue Book.
I didn't know that.
No, the Roswell incident is not in the government Blue Book.
Switching to the topic of Area 51.
Okay.
Do you believe that secret research on captured UFOs is taking place there?
I want to. I don't know that for a fact, but there have been reports. There are 22 levels below ground. There's a place called S4, which is adjacent to what is known as Area 51, where supposedly there are doors made into the side of the mountain. There are 7 levels below ground there. And the reports we've heard is that's where this stuff is kept. I think today, if there is debris from the Roswell craft, it could well be at Area 51 because of the security. I was up there 2 years ago. I did 2 lectures at the little town of Rachel. And my wife and I drove out to both the gates, as a front and back gate, and harassed the guards a little bit. The signs still say the use of deadly force is authorized, and they mean it. It's the top secret military base in the world, the size of Connecticut, has 2 runways. One is 30,000 feet long. Now, what they're bringing in, I don't know, but that's a lot of runway, so they must be bringing something in at a tremendous velocity.
Well, there's two things you said. One, that the area where they keep the secret things is known as S4. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have a military background.
Yes.
Oh, well, then you know what S4 is.
Yeah.
The intelligence.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing was, I wanted to ask you about the, let's see, on Area 51, it's said that there are, underground, there are sort of refrigeration units where they keep bodies of aliens. Have you heard this?
Not at Area 51, I haven't, but at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where the Roswell material was first taken, yes, they had it there. They had cold storage facilities, and were doing the research and development from the Second World War with the equipment we had captured from the Germans,
mm-hmm.
which was the logical place to take any bodies or craft from the crash. Today, I wouldn't be surprised that Area 51 has that.
A famous rocket scientist claims that he was taken into a building there and taken down on an elevator below a hangar, and there was an advanced rocket prototype there that was far beyond anything we were currently known to have. Have you heard that story?
You referring to Bob Lazar?
No. I can't remember this man's name, to be honest with you, but it wasn't certainly not Bob Lazar. This was a rocket scientist. Bob Lazar was an engineer that was back engineering UFOs,
supposedly.
Yeah, I know. I called him. You can't get an interview with him on UFOs
anymore. He's very questionable, not only his background, but
I know
his education doesn't match up or anything else. The only other guy that I know about that would be close to that would be a guy named Phil Schrader. Phil Schrader was involved at Dulce up in northern New Mexico, which is supposed to be a secret underground base, and encountered some aliens underground while they were doing some engineering work, and was that with some kind of a gun, a ray gun of some kind.
Oh, I know that story. Yes,
yeah.
I know that story. He's supposedly one of the only survivors. They had
right.
a fight down there.
And then he went public and was found dead in his apartment with a piano wire wrapped around his neck and said that he committed suicide, which is impossible to do.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the guy you're talking about, no.
Well, anyway, it's really not that important, I guess. Recently, it was stated that the famous Hangar 18 of Area 51 fame is really no longer a hangar, but an office building that was built where the hangar used to be. Have you heard this story?
I don't believe you asked that. Just yesterday, I was in contact with a guy in Dayton, Ohio, who wrote to me and found me on a website. I wrote back to him, I said, since you're at Dayton, do you know anything? And he wrote back and said his mother was taken out by some military man and shown a hangar in 1993 or 1994 and referred to it as Hangar 18. Now, if that's the case, then Wright-Patterson has a new Hangar 18. Originally, we had heard that Hangar 18 was where they took the material from Roswell in 47. That became popular with Barry Goldwater, who was a United States Senator, a retired Brigadier General from Arizona, who ran for president and lost. But he had asked General Mays if he could go into the Blue Room at Hangar 18. And he was told, don't ever ask that question again.
Right.
Now, this was a man running for president of the United States, a retired United States Air Force General, and told he had no business going there. So, as we speak, I'm communicating with this guy in Dayton, and his mother is going to write up a report for me about this Hangar 18. So I'm anxious to get into that because...
Well, I think you're going to find that it's now an office building.
The old one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A brick office building. But
that's what I understand. So uh-huh. maybe there is a new Hangar 18, which is what I'm trying to find out.
Right. Do you believe that Area 51 is the hub of everything extraterrestrial, or was just a ruse to keep us looking at that while they use some other base?
Good question. So much of what we hear is diversionary, just like the crash sites. The one just north of town, 22 miles north of town, I think was a diversionary site to keep people away from the actual site. And I think what you're saying is Area 51... I think it has a lot to do with the UFO situation, but there also is a lot of other stuff. And it was actually set open by the CIA in 1955 to test the U-2 aircraft. And every aircraft since then has been tested on there. The SR-71, Blackbird, the A-10, the A-12, the B-1, the B-2, the F-117. It's a good place to do the testing. And to me, Area 51 is a catch-22. You don't want to tell your adversaries what you're doing. So that's a good place to do it. You can't tell your friends anything without your enemies knowing it. So I think it's a good location. I think it has a viable purpose for the technology and things like that. They are exempt from environmental law.
Oh, I'm well aware of that, yeah.
The two guys that died and their wives tried to sue the government.
Yeah.
The government said you can't sue something that doesn't exist. There's a lot going on there that we don't know about, and probably a lot that we don't need to know about. But my problem is, if there is anything related to ufology, UFOs, craft, bodies, whatever, I'd like to know that.
I think we all would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Area 51, actually the site was picked by a test pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I want to get back to the signs on Area 51, the ones that say that deadly force can be used. Do you know of anyone ever being shot or killed while trying to get close to, or even disappearing for that matter?
Well, I talked to a guy who happened to go across the boundary, and there's no fence. The signs are at the roads that lead in. There's two entrances. One of them has no gates, and you have to go a quarter mile past the signs around some sand dunes before you get to the guardhouse.
Mm-hmm.
If you get that far, you've been on the property for a quarter mile, and they have you. And what I understand they do is they will call the local sheriff, and you will be arrested. You will be interrogated for a period of time. And fines can run anywhere from $500 to $6,000. And I guarantee you they will know where you're at for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
The other gate that I went to has two drop-down gates. There's a drop-down gate, there's a guardhouse, and then there's another drop-down gate with stop signs on them. So you get inside there. I think that's where deliveries are made. And they go in there to the guardhouse. We went by there. And there's a camera mounted on about a 25, 30-foot high pole, and I walked down along the boundary, and that camera followed me everywhere I went. And every so often, I'd stop and wave at him to harass him a little bit. It's got to be a boring job for the guards to sit out there in the middle of nowhere, you know, wait for somebody to come up.
Did you notice any other electronic devices when you were there?
Yeah, they have... They can monitor whatever you're saying at the gates, because they have equipment set up on the hills that can listening equipment.
They also have TV cameras that goes back to the main base into the guardhouses where they can keep track of people that are roaming around out there.
Mm.
And these are all solar powered, so they're full time.
Because I've seen photographs, you know, where you can actually see devices sticking out of the ground.
Yeah.
They look like little radar antennas and things, you know.
And the boundary is marked by, I guess every 50, 100 yards, there's a pole with a sphere on top of it, a metal, silver-looking sphere. The boundary markers, that's for the airplanes that patrol it, the helicopters and the F-16s that patrol it. And, of course, the airspace is restricted, and if you're anywhere close to it, you'll be asked by the tower to vector away, and if you don't, you're going to be met by an F-16.
Wow. What other places do you think might exist where they might be trying to back-engineer UFOs? Some of the theories state that these open places that are open to satellites are really not being used that much, that they may be using buildings inside of cities, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another reason for what we hear is 22 levels below ground. The United States has signed an agreement with most other countries where they can overfly a country so many times a year. Now, the Russians can overfly daily.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons for going underground. You couldn't do anything above ground anymore because of satellites and things like that. So the United States is not the only one that does that, but it makes sense that you can't do any secretive work above ground anymore. So it's either done inside a hangar or it's done below ground, and they could easily utilize buildings within a city that would be unsuspecting.
Yeah, that's what, that's what how the story goes. Getting back to the business about the fight on the ground with the aliens and the humans, The story that I heard was that the United States allowed aliens to conduct tests on a certain amount of humans. They had to provide a list of who they were going to test, and that the aliens tested too many people. And when we went to complain, the fight broke out. Is that how you heard it, too?
No, the one that I heard was that they were drilling using boring equipment to go down below Dulce, and when they broke through, there was a underground base there with aliens and military people, and a fight broke out there. But are you familiar with the story about Eisenhower in 1955 at Holloman Air Force Base?
Only vaguely. You can tell me again.
Supposedly, he was in Georgia doing some quail hunting at a ranch that he normally hunted at, and was taken out of there and flown to Holloman Air Force Base down around Magordo, which is 100 miles south of here. The Columbine airplane, his airplane, Air Force One back then, landed, turned around in the runway, and stopped, and didn't go up to the hangar or anywhere else. And that shortly thereafter, there were two craft came down, landed.
Oh, yes, yes. Now I'm familiar. You can keep going.
Supposedly, he went inside, one of them for 45 minutes, and made an agreement. There was also a report of him being at Muroc, which was Edwards Air Force Base today, where he also had a meeting with them, and at the time was told that he gave permission for Americans to be abducted, providing they were returned to the original location and had no memory of it, in return for technology. I cannot prove this, but this is something that's sure an interesting story and something that I'd like to verify somehow someday.
There have been several indications that our government has really increased the amount of digging they're doing underground. Do you think that any of this might be for the benefit of aliens?
No, I think it's our own benefit. We believe that most of the military bases in the western United States, at least, are interconnected with tunnels. There's plenty of equipment and personnel to do this. I've got a copy of a nuclear boring machine that was developed at Los Alamos in 1973. I have the patent number and a drawing where this thing can go through the ground, the nuclear device can go through the ground, melt the rock and dirt into a magma and push it into the wall, making a glass-like lining, meaning that nothing has to come above ground or go below ground. The thing could be underneath me right now and I wouldn't know it.
Oh, interesting.
And there's several other different types of boring machines that are used. There's a lot of experience in this underground work with coal, diamonds, different minerals and things that we've developed over the years. Been a lot of it done with commercial use. The tunnel between France and England used something like six of these boring machines to make the tunnel. Many of the cities use it for water systems and things like that. So it's an easy accessible material and equipment to use, and I'm convinced that the military uses it because I have a picture of one of the boring machines with an Air Force emblem on it.
Ah.
The Pentagon owns at least one of them that I know of.
Supposedly, UFOs were spotted flying in and out of the earth near India and the Chinese border. Do you think there might be an underground base there?
Well, there's reports of these underground bases worldwide, even out of the ocean. There's been reports of unidentified objects coming out of the surface of water and taking off and going back into the water. And many nations have reported these things coming out. Up at Dulce in New Mexico, they claim it comes out of the mountain. There's locations worldwide.
Well, you know, sometimes I wonder about that because if UFOs can go under the water where we can't reach them, why would they want to bother going under the ground, you know?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
That's just a thought. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. Good point, though.
Do you believe that aliens are visiting the Earth? And if so, do you think that there's more than one race and that these races might be at different levels of technology?
Yes, yes, and yes. I'm convinced that not only are we being visited, but we have been visited for a long, long time, much, much longer than Roswell. There's tapestries and artwork back from the 13th and 14th centuries that the artist shows what appears to be craft of some kind in the drawings and the tapestries. Species, we used to think 5 or 6. Now we could talk maybe 50 or 60. And again, that doesn't surprise me if you look at the insects on Earth. There's still insects and animals being found that we knew nothing about. And if you compare the Earth to the universe as far as size, it's limitless. I don't think they're here to do any destruction. I think they're here to monitor us, because I think they're concerned about us self-destructing or going into space and sharing our weapons out there where they are.
Some people think that maybe UFOs, if they exist, are not really being piloted by aliens, but by some ancient race from the Earth. Have you heard that one?
Oh, you're talking dimensions. That's a theory, that we are either a future of ourselves or a past of ourselves, and that what this is a dimension problem rather than an extraterrestrial problem.
A lot of interest has been generated by cattle mutilations. Some have said that they're really being done by humans to examine the effects of radiation from former nuclear bomb tests on cattle and people in the Midwest. What are your feelings on that subject?
If it was our government doing mutilations, would they not just go to a rancher or a farmer and say, I want a cow, rather than take it the way they do? I don't do mutilations. I don't do sightings. I limited myself years ago to Roswell Area 51 underground bases and recently the pyramids, because I found that if you try to be knowledgeable on all the subjects of ufology, pretty soon you don't know anything. So I try to concentrate on those four areas, but I do maintain an interest in sightings and mutilations and things like abductions and things like that. But right now, for me, mutilations have never been explained properly, but I think I know up at Area 51 they check both humans and cattle every so often, because there's radiation leakage coming out of Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm of the opinion that if it was the government doing this, they would just go tell the rancher, I want one of your cows, and what could he do? He'd have to give him one.
No, that's true. A lot of governments have been releasing UFO data. Do you think that any of them are withholding information, even though they claim not to be?
Yep.
And I'm not talking about the U.S., which has not really released
You're talking about the U.K., Britain,
France,
and you're talking about Brazil.
Right. Do you think they're really forthcoming with 100% of the UFO data?
No, I do not. I think they're just like the United States. They're making a big splash to make it look good, and I think they're giving you what you want. I don't know that we'll ever get the information. I'm convinced that this is controlled by a few people, not including the president. I don't believe the president's involved, because he's a temporary employee.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be trusted. He's there 8 years and then he's gone. So I think he's probably informed, but not detailed. This has been proven, I think, over and over since Truman, with several presidents.
Except maybe for this president, right?
If there's any president that knew anything, it was probably Bush Sr., because he was head of the CIA.
Well, that's precisely why I'm saying probably not this president. He probably knows because of his father.
Yeah, if his father shared it with him, and he may not have. But I think Bush Sr. would probably be one of the few. I know Reagan was very interested. He talked to Gorbachev, the Russian premier, about UFOs. He made a statement at the United Nations and was told, don't ever make a statement like that again.
Yeah, he actually made about 8 statements, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Clinton was interested in it and sent an aide named Hubble out to find out about the Kennedy assassination and Roswell, and came back and said he couldn't find anything.
Nixon seems to have found out about it.
Nixon was friends with Jackie Gleason.
That's right. I know the story. Yeah.
And supposedly in Florida, actually saw craft and bodies. They're working on that one, too. We're trying to, you know, there's so much of this as rumor and can't be proven, and in this field, you can't come out with anything unless it can be verified, because there's too many standing on the sideline to jump on you and disprove it. And I'm convinced doing shows like yours and writing editorials or doing lectures, I can say anything I want to because they can deny it.
Right. Well, what are your thoughts on the O'Hare UFO? What do you think that a UFO would go over a gate and sit there for a half hour without moving, knowing that they're in the middle of a busy airport and everybody's going to know about it? Do you think they're getting ready for first contact, or that they feel maybe that there was first contact already and the government won't tell anybody, so they want us to know?
I think maybe it has to do with exposure on their part, educating the public perhaps. But you saw how that was handled. The Federal Aviation Administration said it was a weather phenomenon that punched a hole in the cloud when it left.
Right.
The same thing's true down in Stephenville, Texas last week. Just this morning, the Navy came out and said, oh, by the way, we did have 10 F-16s flying around that area a week and a half ago, but we didn't know it. Excuse me, you know,
yeah.
How stupid do they think we are? I mean, you're talking a lot of money to put 10 F-16s up in the air for an exercise of some kind, and they don't know about it?
Yeah, this is very ridiculous.
The Phoenix Lights, you know, supposedly flares by the Maryland Air National Guard. If that's the case, bring them back, drop the flares again, and let's see what it looks like. It's easy to resolve.
Well, Bruce McAbee, you know Bruce McAbee,
mm-hmm.
right? Dr. Bruce McAbee?
Yeah.
I had an interview with him, and he was studying the Phoenix Lights. It was very interesting. Well, at this point, here is your chance to make any statement you'd like to make. Everybody laughs when I say that.
Boy, was that a setup. Well, let me push my website, truthseeker at Roswell, all one word. The word at, not the symbol, truthseeker@roswell.com. I've got a lot of information on there. I write editorials about every other month on these four areas that I research and always look for comments from people. I get about 100 to 150 emails a day, of which I probably delete 90%. But I do try to respond to all the emails I get from people that have questions or comments about any of my research and the subject in general. I think we need the media to get on board and start being truthful with the public and not make light of all these incidents that are taking place. I think there is something happening right now. I think O'Hare, Phoenix Lights, Stephenville, Texas are things that have not been proven. I won't go as far as to say they're UFOs from extraterrestrials, but I will say they are UFOs because at this point they haven't been identified. And that's what a UFO is, unidentified flying objects.
Right. And, Dennis, I want to thank you. That was very interesting.
Well, you did some homework. I'm going to congratulate you. You've done some homework.